There probably are some overlapping thoughts, but I'd like to have us continue again for the sake of time. Let's take a look at man and nature. What did God intend as man's relationship with nature? I won't refer to any specific verses to start our conversation here, but we can see in chapter 1 that he mentioned the idea of dominion. And in the same chapter, he also talks about food that would sustain mankind as well as the animals. And there are references in chapter 2 that we read that also indicate God's intention. He has intentional purposes behind how man and nature would relate. So what is that relationship? And then again, how is this attacked? What was God's intention? And how is this attacked? How is that relationship attacked when we hear things today? So we could start with just some explanations, perhaps. What are some of the things that are mentioned specifically in these verses? What does it mean for dominion, for example, and some of the other things that are mentioned in chapter 1 and chapter 2?
Just to start off the conversation, we see that in the Bible, like Christ is the head of the assembly. He is taking care of it. Man was put at the head somehow of creation. He had to take care of that creation. So maybe just to kick off this conversation.
Dominion is a kingdom, and man was king over it. God had told him to have rule over every creature. I never thought before that Noah, you know, taking 2 or 7 of every creature, he was doing what God had told Adam and Eve to do. He was having dominion. He was protecting and providing for those animals. Of course, he did it in obedience to God, but he protected and provided for them.
So is there any truth for the Christian to what is termed the environmental movement? Is that something that we should care about at all, or do we not care about it at all, or where does that fit? I mean, doesn't dominion mean you could smash it if you want? You're in charge, right? I don't really believe that, but what does that mean? We already had some comments that the Lord is taking care of his church. He nourishes, he cherishes, and we may apply some of those same thoughts. There's a hand. Yeah, Jason.
Well, wouldn't it be kind of like the same concept of marriage? The husband is the head. It doesn't mean he has, you know, this authority. You know, I could smash, and it doesn't mean that. Does it? It means that there's. It means that there should be a loving relationship, and so in the same thing, man towards nature, should it not be caring for, not you know. Including the oceans and all this stuff. But then maybe, I guess this is where you bring in the how is it attacked, taking it so far that man is almost in subjection to nature because of all the...
That's one thing. I'm not an ecologist, but we need to take care of our environment, which is good. This is the intention of God, but the problem is that man put this creation over his head, like the monkeys and stuff like that. It's good to protect and, you know, cherish, and it's good. We have to do that, but the problem is they are making a religion of it.
It's a very elegant theory. You can use it to attack every single one of these points.
That's exactly one of the thoughts I had, too, that if we feel that we just evolved, if we are taught that we just evolved from nature, we're simply part of nature. I remember being in a biology course where the teaching assistant in a lab was telling us that, you know, we tend to be very human-centered, and we think that we are the crown of nature. But really, we are simply very well adapted to our environment, and the grasshopper is very well adapted to its environment, and there's no difference. If we take in that thought and we really begin to act on it, you know, then simply we are just part of nature. It leads also to the thought that, you know, nature itself perhaps is God. We deify nature itself. God is in all of nature, this animistic view of religion, A-N-I-M-I-S-T, is animist. And that person is someone who believes that everything is animated. Everything is God around us. And there's no difference. And this is a very severe attack. It's directly, if we look at it as if it were, as if it has purpose behind it, that philosophy, we could say, is designed to undermine the fact that there is special creation of God, and especially in a very unique way with people.
The question, can man destroy nature? Or, the theoretical nuclear apocalypse or whatever, all these concepts. Can man destroy this world? Is that within our power?
Is it possible to destroy nature? Is it possible for mankind to destroy the nature that God has made? Some kind of apocalypse of some kind, yeah.
To happen?
That's the point.
Yeah. So Alex is saying, would God allow that to happen? I would say, well, go ahead, Alex, why don't you say what you're thinking?
Well, now, God did say in Genesis 11:6 that man, unless he confused their languages, would be able to do anything that they meditated doing. So, yes, it's possible. However, that's assuming we're living in a vacuum and there is no God. So, the question is, would God allow it to happen? And it certainly seems that with all the mistakes we've made, the Earth seems to be holding up remarkably well. So,
and we might say from a judgment standpoint that God has reserved the rights of the final destruction of this world for himself.
I got a scripture for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
2 Peter chapter 3, others may have it. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men.
Yeah, very good.
So, that's also of the verse that the creation suffers.
Mm-hmm. In Romans 8.
Okay, yeah. So we see that for the question, yes, it's possible. Will God allow it? We don't know, but man is responsible. Mm. And that's the point. He is responsible.
I would be strong enough to say that I don't think, based upon this verse in Peter, that God is not going to allow man.
Yes, yeah.
That's it.
Based upon this, I don't think he's going to allow man. You may argue men have the capacity, the capability to do a lot of harm.
Right.
But based upon this, isn't it another portion, that maybe in the same portion, that speaks about fire that the Lord is going to
later in chapter 3.
This earth.
The elements will be
burnt up.
Burnt up, melt with fervent heat.
Yeah, so God is going to do it. I think that we could argue that in verse... verse 12, looking for a hasten the coming day, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, elements will melt with fervent heat, and so on.
Yeah, very good.
But I think what our brother was saying before, there's definitely different degrees of destruction, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, do we have would the Lord allow us to completely incinerate planet Earth? No, but all types of wickedness that men engage in. Who knows what types of destruction, what level we could bring his creation to. But I guess the question that I have, which I think we've been discussing a little bit, is, can we have some thoughts on what it means to subdue the earth? Because I think that's really the crux of the matter, right? It's, what's my responsibility to the creation? I guess scripturally it's based around that word subdue. So what does that mean?
And we'll have to have just one or two thoughts there so that we can have time for our next point.
I think one of the points that you made the other day was talking about if you let a front lawn just go, it'll turn into a wilderness lawn soon enough. Maybe that's the idea of subduing. You don't let nature get too out of control. It reaches a point where you can visually see that things are out of order, so you just take the necessary steps, pruning, mowing the lawn, whatever it may be, to keep nature under control without it going crazy.